There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey guitar nerds, if you like this podcast, you should check out Between the Liner Notes. Between the Liner Notes is a documentary style podcast about music's forgotten stories. AV Club recently called BTLN an immaculately produced podcast that churns out overlooked bits of music history that most listeners weren't even aware they wanted. Episodes cover stories like how MTV's I Want My MTV ad campaign saved the network from ruin, how jazz began in a New Orleans red light district, and how 3,000 beatniks once started a riot because New York City banned them from singing. You can find Between the Liner Notes on every podcast app, including iTunes, so be sure to check it out. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Good afternoon.
Jay Cross.
Hello, all.
And Joey Branton.
Bonsoir, mes amis.
Back from tour and still alive.
Both of those things are
back
true.
From tour and still a bore.
Thanks for joining us this week. Like the last 2 weeks, we've been Brantonless. So, yeah. And it has been noted. People are like, oh, where's the mildly irritating one?
Well, exactly. They must have been dull podcasts. Basically, you guys just reading lists.
No, they've been
good. I like a good list.
Yeah, they've been good. Interesting. A lot more facts, a lot less arsing around.
Well, now it's back to arsing around and factsless gibberish.
Indeed. And we'll go into what you've been doing shortly. But first, I wanted to catch up with Matthew Knight. Matt, yes. How's it going in the London?
Good. Apart from being grey, I just came back from afternoon tea at the Ritz.
Oh yeah, of course. you got that big old boss money, of course.
Yeah, it was part of my my girlfriend's 30th birthday present that her friends got her. So we went and enjoyed afternoon tea at the Ritz.
What'd you get as part of the afternoon tea?
Ritz biscuits.
Ritz biscuits. Loads of Ritz biscuits. Unlimited sandwich, cakes, scones, tea. Unlimited tea. It's very good.
For our American listeners, basically, Matt, you are just confirming every stereotype that they may hold. Yeah, we just went to the Ritz for a bit of afternoon tea and cakes, biscuits.
Pip, pip.
Matt, are these sandwiches really small? Are they cut into triangles?
No, they're just far away.
they are cut into tiny, what you would call a finger sandwich, Joe Branton.
Excuse me?
I think it's best we don't go into Joe Branton's finger sandwiches. That's not an avenue I want to travel down. So aside from eating out at the finest of dineries, Matt Knight, you've had a busy week with some guitar pedals.
Yes, so I've been busy emailing lots of people asking for their help with Guitar Nerds because me and Joe Branton are taking over doing Pedal of the Week.
Fire!
And I got three new pedals this week. Well, four. James at Bright Onion was very kind to send us a patch box for a pedal board that is arriving next week, which I'll show everyone. But we've got a new pedal board for demos, which is awesome. So
you boys have been busy. I didn't know anything about this.
Well. Matt Knight has been busy.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, no, don't worry, I'll sort it all out, Joe, it's fine.
Who's the pedal board coming from?
It's coming from Custom Pedal Boards.
Okay.
They're building one especially for us as well, which is quite nice, custom to our size, just for the demos, so that'll be really nice. So
Shell
we can
pink?
Have a permanent demo board. No, it will be a slightly more industrial chrome.
Okay, nice. Shell chrome.
But yeah, and then VS Audio in Greece got in touch with me and sent me their Royal Flush Overdrive, which is their two-channel overdrive and boost.
Cool.
Which is very, very good. I had a little play around with that on the Facebook yesterday. And then Jamie and Anna were super kind and sent us, and I didn't know when they were going to send these. They just said, we'll send them out to you as soon as they're ready. They sent us the Transmissor Reverb and the Space Spiral Delay, which are their two new reverb and delay pedals, and they are wicked. They are really, really good fun.
So what, one's reverb and one's delay?
One's reverb that runs through a resonant filter.
Okay.
So imagine, like, it was co-designed with a DJ, apparently. So they basically copied the same sort of filter that you would get on like a mixer.
Right.
So if you're like a turntablist or whatever, and you've got like a filter, so the resonance is turned all the way up, so then you've just got the cutoff sweep. And then that is variable with an expression pedal. So you can kind of have this cool reverb, and then you can kind of add this like post reverb filter onto it.
Weird.
Which is super nice. Yeah, it's really good fun actually. The first time I turned it, I was like, oh, this is amazing. You can actually like play it like a proper, like, you know, that's the first thing anyone ever does if they're like in front of some sort of mixer or synthesizer, is just turn the cut off because it sounds like you're doing something.
Yeah, you just do that thing.
Exactly.
That all
so
DJs
when you had
do.
Your Yamaha DJX keyboard, you
DJ.
Know, you just DJ. And then they also sent us the Space Spiral Delay, which is their modulation delay. And it's brilliant. It's on the same sort of lines as the Mataverse, the
okay.
Warble
oh,
Swell
cool.
Deluxe. Yeah, it doesn't have as many controls. It has the world's brightest LED in it. I turned it on. I was like, oh, my God, I'm slightly blinded.
Of course.
And then I emailed Jamie to say, you know, thanks very much for sending the pedals. It's awesome. And he's like, I'm free this Thursday. Shall I come on the podcast? And I was like, yes, please. So this Thursday as well, we're also going to talk to him on the podcast.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
I'm glad you were interviewing all these pedal people over. It's for the Patreon channel. And some interesting stuff going on there, particularly looking forward to the Earthquaker one. I think that'll be super, super
yeah, I mean,
cool.
I think they're one of the, I suppose, the biggest boutique brands at the moment. You know,
yeah.
They're the kind of guys that have sort of almost risen to the top. So, be really interesting because I know that if they've been around a long time, and I found a really old picture of the pedal board of mine from years ago, and it had an Earthquaker delay on it, so I know they've been going a long time, but I think only recently have they sort of become like one of the go-to brands.
Yeah, and so many pedals as well, like we saw from NAMM, I think it was, where they like discontinued everything and then put out 18 new pedals.
Well, yes. I guess the story of Earthquaker kind of fits really in well with the rise of the boutique pedal industry in general, doesn't it? You know, they sort of were knocking about at the same time, and you know,
have you seen their little documentary?
I have not.
They've done like when they changed their range round and released all the new pedals, they also released a little documentary on the rise of Earthquaker and how it was started. It's a husband and wife team, and when they were making pedals in their garage in their first home, and then they had a kid and moved somewhere else and expanded where they were making things. It takes you through like their first, when they employed their first additional help, because it was always in their home, and then when they bought their first office and employed a couple more people. And it's such a family sort of team. They do this shot of like the two owners with the first staff member, and then all the other staff members sort of walk in.
Okay.
And it's all like shot in their garden and stuff like
nice.
That, and outside the front of the little place. It's such a brilliant little localized organization for something to be as worldwide dominant on the boutique circuit as they are. It's worth watching. It's only like sort of 15 minutes, but it's a really nice insight into what looks to be a really nice, you know, well-run company, not very corporate.
Matty, have you got them both coming on for a podcast interview, or is it just Jamie?
I think it's just Jamie.
Okay.
That's coming on.
Okay.
Because he does a lot of the designs.
Okay.
So I think Anna does a lot more of the business, and he does a lot more of the kind of sort of circuit design work. But yeah, and then 2 weeks on from that as well, just kind of with more Patreon interviews, I'm doing Nick Reinhardt and Juan Alderete.
Yes, you are.
The week after that.
Joe Branton's not going to be able to listen to that without, you know, doing things to himself, I don't think.
Yeah.
He's going to be very, very interested to see and hear that one, I think. That's super cool, Matty. I think, it's nice that we've got a lot of interesting stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Have you been up to anything else this week? You played any
Any new gear or any interesting guitar bits?
No guitar stuff. I was actually going to try and go to see my friend, well, our friend, Nick Aslin at Guitar Guitar Camden this weekend and say hello, but I didn't get a chance. And it also, the bank holiday was extremely busy in London.
Yeah, I bet.
I tried to get 10 minutes down the road on the bus and it took me like half an hour.
Blimey.
So I kind of just gave up the idea of going to Camden, where it was bound to be absolutely mental.
Yeah, that's proper like bank holiday day out, isn't it, Camden
yeah,
town?
Yeah, but... in a couple of weeks, I'm with work. We're taking some of the kind of, we're taking Yoshi and a few of the other boss guys around the UK. So we'll be doing a bit of a guitar shop tour. So might see some cool gear on that
cool
excursion. It's like 4 days of seeing every major guitar shop in the country. So that should be quite good fun.
Nice. Joe Branton, you've been on a tour of sorts. How was it? Sort of debauchery can you actually talk about?
About half.
Okay, fine.
No, it was it was good. I did 9 dates in Europe. Well, some bits of Europe.
Still allowed into Europe?
Yeah, just about. Yeah,
okay,
only
good.
Some bits.
Okay,
we have to take some interesting routes because of the countries that I'm banned from.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, we did France, Belgium, Luxembourg, and. Holland for a bit, and yeah, it was really good.
Did you actually play in Holland, or you just drove through?
No, we
Holland?
Went to Amsterdam. We played in Amsterdam, which is really cool.
Can you remember that?
Yes, actually, because Amsterdam is quite expensive, so
yes.
I was less drunk.
Okay,
in,
good.
In Amsterdam, the good. Most drunk I was at a cooperative in somewhere in. I think it was Strasbourg in France, right on the sort of French-German border.
Yeah,
we played like a punk club there, and the beer came in wine bottle size and was €1.50
painful.
A bottle, but half price to the band.
Oh, nice!
So
75 cents or whatever it is.
I drank 10.
Okay, so for. The equivalent of
before
about
£6.
You had 10 pints.
Well, we were on at midnight, so I'd done. I was quite drunk when I played, but it was fine. I was on autopilot by that point. Anyway, not
good. Good to see the punters are getting their money's worth.
Exactly.
I thought you were off the booze now.
Well, I was until the end of that the last month.
Okay.
The month before.
Fully
last.
Back on.
I've got to wind it in back now because I'm feeling very fat. And,
you're looking good. For people on the pod, listening to the pod, you've got a nice haircut. You're looking great. In better shape than I imagined after a 9-day booze-ocalypse.
Yes, thank you. It was good. But gear-wise, it was also...
Yes, this is what we really want to know about.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a three-band tour. We were touring with a French... post-hardcore band called Fall of Messiah and a Scottish math band called Vassa, and yeah, they were all, it's all, everyone's quite gear heavy, so the sort of the load-ins were pretty epic, because I think the smallest pedal board there was me with a Novo 20 pedal train Novo 24. Actually, that's not true. There was a pedal train junior there as well, the bass player from Vassa. He was the smallest, then me, and then everything else was a Novo 32 or a pedal train Grand. It's Grand, isn't it? Or Pro, rather. Sorry.
What's the biggest one, Matt?
It's Pro.
Terra 42 is
right.
Technically the biggest one. That's the widest one, but it's not as deep as
yes.
The Pro.
There were no Terrors, so yeah, it was pros. I think there were 3 pros, and the rest of them were Nova 32s.
How many pedals would you say approximately you can fit onto one of the pros?
Well, that's the thing, because the people with pros had mostly tiered them as well,
well
so there was extra.
The 42, they're designed to take 42, aren't they? Is that the measure of width? Is it in inches?
Yeah.
I've got 42 inch wide pedals.
42 yeah. What? Inch wide what?
Pedals.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, so I think, so there were a lot. I don't know what it was, but the average thing was probably 15, 16 pedals per board. Probably,
that's a lot.
Probably more.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. Vassa both incorporate ES8s into their board, which was great. The only problem I found sort of with, and why I don't think any of my band have moved on to switches yet, is if you have a problem live, that's it. Like, yep. Try working out an ESA in a live situation.
Matt's going to jump in and defend it here.
Well, here the
is there some live feedback? You can just boss man.
You can. I think you can. Can you just bypass it?
Yeah, you just hold down the mute switch, and
and it bypasses.
It hardwires the input to the output.
Right. So that is pretty cool. You get away with it, but of course, if you are completely effect dependent, that's still not much help. And then trying to troubleshoot an ESA live, I think, is quite complicated.
Yeah.
So it only happened once. It happened to Scott Cooper, one of the guitarists in Vassa, but it it was a bit of a debacle.
But I mean, at the same time, it's kind of like it's part of the course, isn't it? You know,
yeah, you've got to,
if you're using all of those things,
need to know how to troubleshoot.
And also, I think it's, you know, I always think it's really impressive when a band has got, there's something's gone wrong with, say, the guitar player, and the bassist and the drummer have obviously got, like, they spot what's going on and they keep the flow going.
They can play a little blues jam.
In one, maybe not a blues jam, but, like, you know, if there's something that they do, I think it's really, I think it's really important that, like, bands have the ability to, like, keep the flow going if something is up, you know, rather than just going, doing what I always used to do, which is, oh, guys, hang on a sec. Can we get some more lights up? Sorry, there's guys.
Something's broken.
There is that happened to me actually a while ago. There's a YouTube. We had like a set where my gear stopped working, and we sort of had to. I had to troubleshoot it, and it ended up being the least most likely thing. So there was quite a bit of sort of time elapsed, and we had to really sort of change what we were doing, like mid song. And of course, we came away from it being like, oh, it was terrible. And then it got uploaded. Someone uploaded it to YouTube on a like titled like best save ever sort of thing, because we'd worked it in and sort of worked around it. But yeah, I guess you do have to sort of know how to troubleshoot. But yeah, it was great. So two ES8s from Vassa, which was really impressive. Blaine Thompson from Vassa has the weirdest drive setup. He has three drive pedals which he blends using the ESA.
Oh, the ESA, okay.
Yeah.
Blends between them?
Yeah. So I don't understand exactly how he does that. I don't know if he has something else set up as like some sort of loop.
What, in that like... Oh, I like the top end from
exactly.
I really like the top end of my Proco Rap, but I like the
well, I mean, I
the
guess,
earthiness of the Tube Screamer.
I guess all you do is run them into a loop each,
and then stick a filter on them.
Yeah, just dial out the bottom.
On the ES8, you can run loops in parallel, so you can actually stack three. Say, for example, loop two and loop three. You can have them run on top of each other, so the signal. Runs the two in series rather than in parallel, so you get like a 50-50 mix of both.
But what I'm saying is, if let's say he, like Joe says, if he likes the top end from the Rat and the bottom end from a OD1 or something, you could just dial in that sound, like dial in a really toppy Rat sound and then dial in a really bassy OD1 sound.
I don't know if he's using, because there's also a newer version that allows you to split the outputs rather than running it in stereo, and I've been messing around with running a basically two drives into two separate amplifiers, so like a fuzz into one amp and an overdrive into the other, and then sticking the volume pedal loop into one amp, so you can then fade in one amp that's got one drive sound on it. So if you've got a fuzz but you want to add in more boost on the other side, you can literally bring the volume pedal in and you can have two independent gains running to two amps, which is quite cool.
That's awesome.
Gotcha. They're an impressive beast.
In Blaine's case, he was running a Timmy, a White Atom, and a Bad Monkey all together.
Yes,
those were the three drives.
And then Bad Monkey.
And then for the big bits, he was bringing in an extra drive from a Boss Metal Zone with everything on full.
Yeah. Why would you not? Why would you not?
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, it was great to have such an effect heavy thing. There were some cool guitars as well. Scott was using like the Road Worn series of Telecasters with the humbucker in the neck.
Yep,
he had two of those. And Blaine has a faded SG that he's retrofitted the Seymour Duncan P90,
the flat cat.
The bladed P90.
Oh, the what's that called? The one that's got the humbucker and the P90, like the P90 and the sort of rails humbucker in.
I can't remember because that's you can then add the triple ring to that, can't you?
Yeah, yeah, you can. Oh, I can't remember what it's called. That's really annoying. You're gonna look now, Matty.
Yeah, but it sounded absolutely brilliant. Yeah, that was a Puck guitar. And Tim was playing. Tim, the guitarist in my band, was playing his SG, his left-handed SG Junior.
Okay.
Which unfortunately was having some real tuning issues.
So, SGs can be a bit fussy sometimes.
Yeah, it's also it's the junior, so you only have that one wraparound bridge, and because he's left-handed and he strings right-handed, you can't use that bridge because you can't change the intonation. It's angled for one way, so we had to get a different bridge that's an all-in-one that has the adjustable saddles.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But of course, having an all-in-one means that it's quite chunky, so it's impossible to get the action down that low. It's just not 100% a sort of working solution. So it was having some issues anyway, and he ended up spending the rest of the tour on his Hagstrom Swede,
which is an actual left-handed guitar.
Both of them were left-handed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, sure, of course. Yeah. But he does the flip.
Yes.
More importantly, what bass did you take? Because you told us a few weeks ago about the Stonefield.
So, yeah.
Did it get a run out?
I didn't take the Stonefield on tour.
Of course not. Why not?
I'm still in the process of sorting out the Stonefield thing because I've been given the opportunity to keep that one or have a custom built one made. Okay. So I was sort of still, and that paperwork came through quite late, and I was still like thinking about what I want to do. Oh, and also I didn't realise, but you can only use certain strings, and I use D'Addario's like 50 to 110s.
Yeah.
And they actually taper off quite short for a long scale set, and they're not long enough. And I was like, I only sort of went to restring like 2 days before, and I was like, oh, I don't really have... I didn't realise until I was doing it, and then I was like, oh, I don't really have time to get a new set of strings. So I took my jazz basses, which was safer, really. We had a show in Luxembourg, and our drummer sort of trashed the stage a bit and at the end, and I sort of felt compelled to sort of join him in that and sort of wrecked one of the jazz basses.
Was it your gear or someone else's gear?
It was our gear. I think he was having a bit of a mare of a show, which didn't come across. I thought it was excellent, but at the end he just like kicked his kick drum off of the raised bit where he was into me, and I was like, well, he's gonna look like an idiot if I don't throw my bass at
this
point.
Should have just gone looked around at him like, what are you doing, and then walked off, done a little bow, bow, and then walked.
I should have, but yes, it was good. So I took my two jazz basses. I took I've got one of the Lacquer Finish 60s Mexican built jazz basses, so I took that. And
that's something that you've had done yourself though, isn't it? That wasn't a stock.
No, actually the P bass was the one I had
done.
Of
course.
So the jazz bass, they did a limited run of Lacquer Finish jazz basses, so it's just like 60, so Sunburst, Torque Guard. I swapped the Torque for black, but yeah, other than that, it's a great bass, and it's the only way to get like a Lacquer Finish Fender for under a grand. I also own a Classic Vibe jazz bass, and the pickups are 10 times better in the Classic Vibe than they are in the Mexican Fender. I assume it's just standard Mexican pickups in the...
Yeah, they're just a bit rubbish, aren't they?
So thin. Yeah. So thin and rubbish. So I still haven't taken them out and swapped them for anything else, but I will do. I'll pop some... I was thinking about maybe getting some DiMarzios because I've never given DiMarzio a run-in, so I'll...
I'm not really sure what they've got available on bass. Maybe need to do a bit of digging, find out what's going on. But yeah, it'd be nice to get a report because I don't know much about DiMarzio. We didn't stock them for a long time when we were at the shop.
No, and people always used to ask, and we...
Have you got any super distortions?
No, we don't.
They're a brand that are kind of a little bit... Well, they're not stuck because people still play them, but like when you think DiMarzio, you think...
80s.
80s. Yeah. Seymour Duncans are the pickups of today, aren't
well,
they?
Well, I think Seymour Duncans are probably the pickups of yesterday, and
Bare Knuckle
are the pickups of today. Yeah,
or like hundreds of boutique... companies are doing that. Matt, talking of Seymour Duncan, what was that pickup that we can't remember the name of?
DiMarzio. No, it was Seymour Duncan. It's called the P-Rails.
P-Rails, of course.
But DiMarzio is awesome. I've got one in my SG at the moment, actually. I've had the PATH Pro in there for quite a while. It's a good little pickup.
Just a PATH clone?
Yeah. basically. And actually, talking of Bare Knuckles, I quickly went on their shop, and they do a custom builder now, so you can build your dream pickup. I don't know whether that's just their sort of standard selection that they had before, but I didn't realise their entire website has changed to something a little bit more modern.
Oh, wow.
It was looking a bit old, I think, yeah. Last time I remember looking.
It's not quite the same as those guitar builders, is it, where you can go on there and like make a load of things. Like, building the pickup's not quite as fun, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would just look like whatever wiring you've chosen plus the camo finish that we would all choose as something done to look at.
I think I'd probably have the Steve Stevens ray gun.
They will actually do that. I think that was one of the best designs. I'm surprised they didn't do more.
So good.
With
that, should we dive in some...
See, I've been off for 2 weeks and this is what happened.
So good.
Nude.
Good. A classic old school nude. So first up, some news that I didn't actually put in the running order here because it only just... came out, actually. I think embargoed today. New amps from Fender, the Mustang GT series. Who knows about them? Jay, do you want to talk about them a little bit?
Yeah, so these appear to be replacing some of the older Mustang amps. We've got three in the range. So there's the GT40, which is a 2x6. The GT100, which is a 1x12, and then a GT200, which is a 2x12, which roughly, I think, fits into like the 2, 3, and 4 brackets of what they used to be Mustang-wise.
Yeah, it was. The 4 was the big...
Yeah, and then the 5 was a head and cab, which they haven't announced anything, so who knows.
And it's a complete facelift as well, this Mustang series.
Yeah, they look a lot more sleek, don't they? I was never a huge fan of the...
No, it was a bit of a messer look, the old ones,
it wasn't it? Just seemed very weird. It didn't seem like they were going down the right route.
Yeah.
Obviously, Fender amps look amazing, but that sort of like... what they call like peppercorn cloth, like I never really liked that,
right.
Like you know, like tweed or
like the Champs were sort of the right move, weren't they? Like it was like this is a simple Fender amp look on an entry level solid state amp, and on the Mustang they obviously tried to make it a bit fresher, and it was just a bit of a weird look. But these ones, completely.
I think they look really good. They look really sleek.
So what's the do we know what they've upgraded in terms of like how they work?
Yeah, so they are stating that they're the first ever Wi-Fi enabled amp.
Okay,
which basically just sort of future proofs it. It just means that you connect it up to your Wi-Fi, and anytime there's a software update, it just updates it for you automatically.
Okay.
You can link it in with they've also launched a new app, which I also think came out today, Fender Tone. Which, from what I've read, is similar to Fender Fuse, which is the old app that came out with
editing software.
Actually, I don't know if it
basically.
Was an app.
Yeah,
no, originally Fuse. No,
I think it was a. Wasn't it? It was like software.
Yeah, it was a program. No, app was the Fender Capacitor.
Really? Is that what it was called?
No, of course not.
I mean, they've called this one Tone. Like, it makes sense that it would have a kind of semi-awful name.
But it allows you to switch between... They're saying that there's limitless presets, but I think you can only have 200 on the amp at any one time.
Right, I see.
And they're going down the route of sort of cloud-based, like sharing... tones and stuff like that.
So you have an account and you can share them.
Yeah. As well, the same as having the same as what they did with
Amplify.
Yeah, exactly.
Amplify was a good example.
Exactly
of that.
Yeah. So yeah, they look really cool. There's not a huge amount out there. Seeing as they were announced today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, none of us have heard anything. Yeah, it'd be interesting to... Because obviously, Boss have seen like quite a lot of success with the Katana. People are kind of raving about those, and it'd be interesting to see where Fender take that. We've not heard great things about the Marshall stuff.
Yeah.
The
Marshall Cods.
Indeed.
It does appear for there to be, a gap in the market for someone to come and try and attack the Katana. I guess we'll see.
What price point wise are they coming out? I assume Boss is still going to have the cheapest ones on the market.
They
I can't
are,
see anyone undercutting
I can't remember the larger
ones. I think
they're
about the same price.
In fact, I do have them here. They're $195 for the 40.
Oh my God. They're the same price.
$195, wow. $325 for the 100, and $400.
What are Marshall going to do?
Well, for the GT200.
What are Marshall going to do?
Well, let's best not go into that again.
So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing what they do with it.
Yeah, cool. It's fine.
Yeah. It seems cool.
Also hitting the streets today, some Fender guitars, which I think you know about, Joe. Is that right?
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those.
I got an email from you about them, so I assume you know about them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
These are the Neo Redline. Is that right?
Yeah, they actually announced these at NAMM.
Is that
I
what
believe.
They're called?
Yeah, yeah.
Neo Redline.
Yeah, they announced them at NAMM, and then to be honest, I saw them in sort of like mail shots by like Guitar and stuff like that like months ago as well, but I don't think they ever
actually the stock never
materialised, and so yeah, from my perspective at GAC, I didn't bother to sort of give them much airtime, as there were things I had in stock that I could promote instead. They look really cool. So it's a full range of guitars. So I think in the range there's...
These are Mexican made.
Sorry, yes, they are Mexican made, and you have... And they're essentially Mexican spec as well. So it's modern hardware and satin finish necks. But what really separates the range is that these all come in a satin black finish, which is fast becoming my favourite finish on a guitar. I know that there's the fingerprint issue, but I just think it looks super cool, and it's really nice to have this available on a Fender. I really like the sort of that blend of modern and traditional. I think they look great. So in the series, I think there's a Strat and a...
Yeah,
there's some basses.
I like that you've forgotten already. Matt, can you get the details up? Let's get someone actually reliable.
But crucially, and the weird thing, is that the... headstock logo and name is in red, and the scratch and the scratch plate has a red outline around it.
A three-ply plate, isn't it? Black.
So
they're anodized though, aren't they? Which is quite cool.
So hence the red line.
But yeah, I don't like the red lines or the red text. If it was just black, that would be cool.
Yeah, I must admit that the kind of red is a bit... odd.
What's available in the range, cool. Matty? What?
Well, I mean, Fender do three main guitars, which I can't believe Joe's forgotten about. But
maybe we do talk about pedals too much.
I couldn't remember if they did a Tele.
Yes, they do a Tele, an HSS Strat, and AP bass. Priced at £539. Anodized gold guard, satin black finish.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
They do. I must admit, that red.
Yeah, I
if
don't
they were
like
all
it.
Black,
but they're maybe. Aimed at a certain type of person, aren't they? And Fender don't really have a dog in that race, so it's good for them to have that. I mean, I kind of think maybe this seems a bit late for this. It's sort of maybe they should have got on this a bit sooner when the Jim Root was popular because the gym route was mopping up. We saw like a brief, do you remember like a couple of years ago, probably more than that now, when we went and did that, we went and shot some videos at a festival in Brighton, like a metal festival.
Yeah, what was that called?
Beach Down?
No.
Something like that, something down. Smash Down? No, Slam Down?
Yeah, so whatever.
Smackdown.
It was a...
we went to watch Smackdown.
It was a metal festival anyway, yes. Wasn't it? And we were interviewing all the bands, and it was like every other guitarist had a Jim Root.
Yeah,
and this is on, and that was on the metal scene, and all of a sudden Fender were the most popular brand. And I think we spoke about it on the podcast at the time. It was so bizarre.
Well, it was really funny. We went there expecting to, like, you and I were a little bit like, oh, I don't know anything about ESP or like Jackson or anything. Like, what are we going to talk about? And then every guitarist was like, yeah, I've got Jim Root or
and a Dark Terror.
Jim Root and a Dark Terror. And we're like, yeah, we know about that. And like Les Paul Studios.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, have you put new pickups in? No, just the normal ones, just the standard. So,
yeah, it's so bizarre. But there has been that big shift, hasn't there? And certainly the Jim Root was the first like perfect crossbreeding of sort of modern and traditional, keeping the modern pickups and that sort of the modern look of like satin finishes with the cool trad body shapes. And this feels like a bit more of sort of Fender trying to do that sort of thing, which is definitely cool. They should do more. They should release a whole range. I guess they did do the black top series, which was also, but that didn't feel, it wasn't quite enough.
I really like the black top. I thought that, you know, we talk about it a lot. I thought that had like a couple of nice little quirks to it, like, you know, the telly having the reversed control plate so that you could your volume swirls and stuff, you know, just a really neat little touch. I thought they were good. Those guitars I thought were fantastic, really really fantastic.
They do this every now and then, they don't know, they'd go like, here's a series, it's got an HSS Strat, a telly and a P-Bass in it. Like, Big Block, do you remember Big Block?
I remember,
you know,
Big Block.
That was part of that. Aerodyne, part of that.
I think one of the best ones they made in the last probably 5 or 6 years was the Graham Coxon signature.
Oh, what a great guitar.
Well, yeah. I mean, totally not what we're talking about, but yes, absolutely. Yes, that's right. From metal, yes. An indie guitarist's signature model in butterscotch with a taut guard was, it was a good guitar.
Brandon's just taking the piss out of you there, Matt.
Yeah, I know. I'm just ignoring it.
Good. I think that's probably for the best. Let's move on. TC Electronic, in their quest for making everything smaller, have announced the Hypergravity Compressor Mini and the Mimic Mini Doubler. Matt, these are just the same pedals in a smaller box, aren't they?
Yeah. What I don't understand is the Mimic Doubler, that I thought the whole point was that it was supposed to be in stereo so that it sounded like your guitar was doubling up. So surely in mono, it's just going to sound like a chorus.
Well, I think the idea was that you could send it out to two tracks if you were recording or whatever.
But I think that they pitched it originally in the original video as being like a stereo pedal.
Yeah, 100%.
So to do it in a small format seems a bit odd because it won't sound like you're doubling up at that point, because it won't be splitting stuff in kind of a big range. Stereo. I think the Hypergravity is a cool compressor, but I'm still not sold on the doubling idea.
Will it double with like a, you know, a 30 millisecond delay sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what it's doing, but you'll end up just sounding like chorus, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if it's only one, because chorus is like more than one, isn't it?
Yeah, but this
more than one
does,
track.
This does do more than one.
Well, that's not doubling then, is it? It's like... it's the chorus.
Do you know why Dublin is the biggest city in the world?
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
No, you've done this to me before.
Because it keeps Dublin and Dublin. Anyway, so have we lost any controls or anything, apart from the Mimic going from stereo to mono?
There is one, because I haven't got the original one up in front of me, but they've shifted everything to 3 controls rather than 4 controls, which are on the full-size ones. I think you've basically got a wet and dry mix and a control for each, and then a tightness control. Hypergravity is just sustain, attack, and level, where the other one had a kind of mix control.
Right, gotcha. So
they're still tone print enabled, just like the Mini, so you can still add in a tone print, and priced at sort of around £99, which I think they're, you know, I think I did like the Hypergravity because it was a digital compressor and it's doing something different to kind of the MXR kind of pedals and kind of like you know, more classic sort of vintage compressors. But in terms of doubling, I still prefer something like the Keeley 30 millisecond.
Yeah.
Which was like, or they did one called the Abbey, which was based on the kind of the Abbey Road sort of Beatles doubling technique, which they had the ADT setting on it, and it just sounded like amazing. I suppose in a way though, it's not a new concept. I think Electro Harmonix had one in the 70s, like an automatic double tracker.
I mean that effect's been around for as long as effects in music have been around, I guess. Yes. That's kind of the first,
probably one of the first ones.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, it does seem, I don't know, I'm not sold on that pedal yet. The hypergravity sounds cool.
Well, not just sound, I think it's great. I mean, compressors are a sort of set and forget kind of pedal, so you don't want them taking up a lot of
room. That's true.
And certainly we've seen sort of you know, obviously we're getting mini pedals a lot more now, but the compressors that are small tend to be the analog simple, you know, volume sustain control pedal. So to have something that's like a multi-band proper sort of studio style compressor in a small footprint, I think, like, who's not going to buy this? Who needs a, who, if you have a big board, if real estate is an issue and you want a modern sounding compressor, I think this is now one of the best things you can get, because it's going to take up less room than anything else.
That's the key thing, isn't it? It's a very modern sounding compressor, whereas I guess, you know, if you wanted something a bit more retro, like we've talked about the Bright Onion baking powder, is it? Is that the one, Matt?
Yeah.
And also, I guess, like, there's the MXR...
Yes, with the Dynacomp.
Dynacomp Mini,
which is sitting on my desk at work at the moment.
Mini pedals, because obviously spending loads of time on Instagram, doing the Guitar Notes Instagram, and so many pedal boards now have less mini pedals on them.
Yeah, I think so.
And I'm wondering whether it's like that phase has passed.
It is a slightly false economy, I guess, isn't it?
But also I think it's less to do with you know, having fewer controls, and more to do with the fact that there's like that emotional connection now. People think, oh, mini pedal, oh, cheap. Yeah. And that people, you know, you want to move away from that. And, you know, unless you're someone like Ibanez, who are making the mini pedals look like the larger pedals, or Dunlop making, you know, the fuzz face look like a smaller fuzz face, it is kind of, you know, it's important to have that emotional connection with things. And I think people do, you know, that the marketing is kind of, it's like, oh, small is cheap now.
Yeah.
I need a massive Strymon pedal looking thing, you know. And funnily enough, we're now seeing Moore do exactly that in the Devin Townsend.
Yeah, Devin Townsend's pedal. What's it called? Ocean Machine.
You know, yeah. So all of a sudden we are now seeing cheap companies.
Yeah.
Doing something that the, you know, the super expensive companies would normally do. It's interesting. I'm
so many of the pedals I've seen come out recently, like boutique ones, are like bigger than Strymon units. I think people are going, actually, do you know what? If I'm spending all this time developing something that's cool, I'm going to put it in whatever the hell I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. There is actually another problem that is seldom talked about, but I, for a very short period, set up. Well, I think like a practice, but I set up a I took off my TU3 and put on the TC Polytune Mini, and then I changed to the Exotic Effects. What was their compressor called? Was it the SP?
SP, I think.
Yeah, I had those, but of course the tuner and the compressor are going to be the first thing going into my chain, meaning that my guitar is going to be plugged into those, so the heavier cable is coming out of those.
Yeah.
Can't take.
They just flap around everywhere.
They just flap. They
can't take. That's a really interesting point, actually.
And it was like, oh, I kind of actually need the support of a TU3. And I spent the whole time being like concerned, like that the even with strong Velcro, they kept sort of like coming loose. And I was like, oh, I can't thrash around a stage with these pedals on.
And if you use something like those Fender patch cables, they're just too strong and they just pull the pedals off if you've got those little ones.
Yeah, so that was actually a problem as well, I think. I had to switch like a cheapy rotor sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to keep the pedal on the board.
Talking of pedals that are fairly chunky and take up a decent amount of space on the board, Free the Tone have just unveiled the Flight Time FT2Y. Matt Knight, give us the deets.
I love the first version, mainly because I don't know whether they did, but it looks like the console from the DeLorean in Back to the Future.
Yes, 100%.
And I don't know whether that was a conscious design choice or not, but when I saw it, I was like, that really looks like the the DeLorean console from Back to the Future. But anyway, for flight time, so we did the chorus before, Free the Tone, awesome Japanese company making some amazing sort of high-end, high-quality bits of kit. This is an upgrade from the first flight time. So they've added MIDI out now, so you've got better MIDI control. So I think the earlier one only had MIDI in, so you had to have like a junction box if you wanted to use a switcher or something like that. It's got a better tail between two presets, so you can switch between preset one and preset two, and it'll actually blend between the two delay functions, which I thought was quite cool. I was having a look on their website to read a few more bits, and they say world first real-time BPM analyzer, and I can't really work that out because it's just saying that it automatically works out the BPM dependent on how you tap in the tempo, but then surely that's just tap tempo.
I mean, that's been happening, like, that's really
they
weird.
They actually put the real-time BPM analyzer adjusts the delay time by automatically trimming the BPM based on real-time tempo analysis of the current performance within the range of plus minus 20% of the tempo information entered by the foot switch. So I don't know if that's like...
Work it out from your playing then? Or?
Yeah, what it sounds like is you set the tap tempo with the foot switch and then you play and then it will go... It will readjust the tempo
20%
either way.
Right, okay, so if you're slightly out. Yeah. Right, gotcha.
Wait. Weird. What if you're playing in like a weird time signature?
I think you can turn it off.
No one wants that. No one wants to play in a weird time signature.
Sounds like a naff idea.
But also, the time signature shouldn't affect the the tempo.
What if there's a tempo change?
Okay.
But then you re-tap on the foot switch.
However, if there's a real-time MIDI information, then potentially if you play to a click, then it would adjust.
Yeah, as it goes.
In real time.
But also, if there's a tempo change, you're probably changing more than... 20% off of the, do you know what I mean? Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, so it won't do anything.
That's actually very smart, you know, especially if you've got like a bunch of boozy geezers who are out touring in the middle of nowhere, and all of a sudden they're like, close enough when they're trying to get their tap tempo in time.
Yeah, and it will readjust. They know their market perfectly.
I can't think of anyone who that would be good for.
Weird.
But it's added a couple of other cool sort of features. They've upgraded the analog input and output, upgraded the power supply circuit in it to make it kind of a bit cleaner sounding. New filters on there for the delay sounds. And then one thing that they put on here, which is quite cool, which I'm not sure I fully understand how it would work, but they've put like a sound hold function. So even if the delay's off, with an external foot switch, you can trigger the stored delay sound. So I don't know if that means it will just apply repeats to when you like momentarily hold down the button. I'm assuming that's probably what they mean from that, but it's not 100% clear on their website.
Interesting. We'll have to get our hands on one, because that sounds like, firstly, quite mad, and secondly, looks amazing, because it does look like the DeLorean plane.
Yeah. And I mean, the chorus was fantastic. The Tri-Avatar chorus was really, really nice. Yeah. So I think, great company, making some cool stuff. So it'd be definitely interesting to hear it.
Have you heard the Ambispace, the reverb that they do?
Man? I haven't actually. I've only heard a few demos, but I haven't actually seen one yet. I don't actually know if they're... I'm pretty sure they must be out. I've not...
It's on their site. Yet.
I saw it at NAMM briefly.
Oh, okay. I've never heard it. They've named it perfectly to pique my interest. Ambispace.
Ambient and space reverb. Yeah,
completely. Yeah, that's perfect. Like, I'm there 100%.
Let's do one last bit of news this week. I want to talk about the Floyd Rose dead arm.
Oh,
now,
my God.
Now.
This is ridiculous.
Now. Is this an April Fool's joke?
This is stupid.
I don't think it is stupid.
Work.
When I first saw it, I thought, this is a joke, isn't it? And then I saw a load of people on, I think, Pedalboards of Doom saying like, oh yeah, this is amazing. What? And part of me thinks, okay, if this is a real product, this is a really smart idea. Because the way that they've laid it out is, you know, for people who want a kill switch, they've got to take their hand away from their guitar, from their, you know, the position upon which they play, and tap this kill switch or whatever, which is like, you know, if you're into that sort of thing, probably is a bit of a pain. So having it there
We should describe what it is first.
Okay, fine,
so
sorry.
Floyd Rose have basically developed a system that allows you to insert a tremolo arm into a Floyd Rose bridge that has a button on the end of the tremolo arm that
which
acts
looks
as
like a detonator.
It looks like a sort of, yeah, comedy detonator, yeah, base. It's a comedy button. And it, that is acting as a kill switch. So the idea is that you can be doing, yeah, a dive bomb on the trem arm and still hit the kill switch.
I was just doing a little bit of reading because I had a guitar with a kill switch on it, which is basically like a button, and you wire it in between the kind of like the volume control and the output control, and it looks like this has got the same wiring that goes underneath the like the trem block from the other side.
Okay.
So your trem arm goes in the top, and then this little kind of like screw goes in the bottom, and then that's where you wire between the ground, and then the kill switch has a little wire that cuts it out.
Yeah, I think, the downside to it is it doesn't look very nice. Like we said, it looks like it's got a kind of comedy switch.
Acme detonator.
It looks a bit chunky.
Yeah, it looks like something out of like you say, like Roadrunner.
Yeah.
But someone could do something really cool with this, and, you know, it's not... Someone like Tom Morello is not my kind of favourite guitarist. I'm not really into that type of music. But put in the hands of someone who was doing stuff with dive bombs, with the whammy and kill switch and things like that, this could actually be pretty revolutionary. Like, it could change.
Completely. And it's also not that expensive. I was looking on the Floyd Rose site today. They're charging $50 for it.
Okay.
Which, you know, what's a standard tremolo? It's probably
like 20,
quid. $25, probably, yeah, something like that. So it actually doesn't seem too unreasonable for me. Now, that said, this could absolutely just be Floyd Rose having a laugh with us.
Oh, completely.
All. You know, we could have people just sitting at home just saying, like, going, you bunch of gullible
wallies. You didn't get the joke.
Yeah.
But in theory, I mean, it looks like it'll work.
Quite the opposite. I think it is quite, if it is a joke, they're fantastic, but the more we've talked about it, the more I'm thinking, I don't think it is a joke.
If it is a joke, well, let's just make some.
Well, completely.
Because they sound really useful. I think it's, cool thing. Difficult to work out if it was a joke or not. I think it's all good. Shall we dive headfirst into some...
Questionables.
Was that your life choices while you were on tour?
Yes.
Good, good.
I got some... I had to do the segues while you were away.
Oh, yeah? How did it go?
It didn't go very well. I said news, and then I said questions.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And But I can't go as low as you.
Let's just have a quick questions off.
I can't...
Questions!
See, I was told to get closer.
Okay, I'm going
to
turn your mic down a touch.
See, but... I can't go as low as you.
Question.
Oh, nice. That was a lot better than last week. Like, moving closer to the mic really
helped. I followed Al's advice.
Yeah, yeah.
Al from the Facebook group said to get closer.
Much better. Let's dive into some...
It's almost like he's a sound engineer or something. I don't know.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Let's dive into some questions.
Not sound engineer, but mix it. Like, a mixer. Produces records.
DJ.
Record producer.
Mixmaster Al.
Yeah, I think he's in Run DMC.
Yeah, good. Emiliano says...
Emiliano!
That was so loud.
That's the best name ever.
You totally...
Just sorry if I've broken your headphones. Emiliano says, have any of you changed the bridge pickup of a Strat for some of those single coil sized humbuckers? I realise that I seldom use my bridge pickup for cleans, overdrive, crunch sound, and select it only when using high gain. So has anyone done that? Matt and I assume you've done something like that.
No, but yes. there are also guitars that you could get that come with that. The Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature Ibanez.
It only had that one pickup, didn't it?
Yeah, which is great.
Matt, what guitar did you put this in?
I had my first ever proper... No, my second ever American Strat, which was also in the same colour. It was an old Strat Plus from 1999, I believe. And I put a Seymour Duncan Little 59 in... Is it a Little 59? No, what's the slightly more powerful one than that?
Quarter Pounder?
No.
JB Junior.
JB, one of the more higher output single coil humbuckers. And it was great, but it's the thing about that is that you basically turn your guitar into two guitars. A humbucker guitar and a single coil guitar.
Yeah.
But you can never use both switching between them because you've got this great neck sound and it's super clean and it's all jangly and Hendrix like in the neck position, and then you switch to the bridge and it just sounds like it's like so bright and like, you know, way better for gain, or you're using it for gain and then you go to the neck position and you're like, oh, where's my sound gone? So you kind of have to balance the whole set, I think. Otherwise, you tend to find that you've got one pickup that works in one position, but you can never use any of the other positions, or vice versa, really.
I had exactly the same experience. I put a JB Jr. in a 70s Tele, and the neck pickup in the 70s Tele sounded great, but it was really low output. And then you switch to the JB, and it's like, oh,
too much.
My head's gone. My head has been blown off by this pickup. And also, you need to think about like the actual tone of it, I guess. Like the JB is quite mid-rangey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind
of...
Go on, Matt.
I was going to say, when they're high output as well, you get a lot more bottom end.
Yeah.
So depending on what kind of strat you've got and what kind of amp, you might find that everything becomes like super bassy as well.
Yeah. That was the issue with this Tele, really, is that the pickups that were in there initially were really bright and a bit lower output and stuff, and putting that in there just overwhelmed basically everything that I did with it. So yeah, I mean, if you're going to make that choice, I guess you want to kind of maybe get the whole set. Like, what's the there's a real nice Duncan set that's got is it the Everything Axe set, I think?
Yeah,
was the...
that is correct. Yeah, so it turns your Strat into basically a three humbucker guitar,
but the also humbucker in the middle is split, isn't it? It's a different format.
Yeah,
to the,
yeah, and also
the
gives you the
bucker,
yeah,
I think, in the middle.
Also gives you the option, a duck bucker,
right?
Also gives you the option to split into single coils and stuff, so you can kind of like switch between a bridge single bridge humbucker and bridge single coil, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, you could do some pretty nuts stuff.
Yeah,
with
the band Foes, both their guitarists have Strats with the whatever it's called, the Everything Axe sets,
yeah,
in them.
You know what you could do?
Old 70s Strats, and they sound mental.
Yeah,
you can actually get like a sync. You can actually do humbucker to single coil on a like variable pot, so you could actually like wind the output down slightly.
You could.
They had that on the Fender Classic Player Jaguar H8.
They did.
Do you remember that? It was like a gradual coil
split. Reducer
tap split. Split.
No, tap.
Yeah, tap. A gradual coil tap, which is weird. You don't see that in any other guitar.
Yeah, I can't think of any other stock guitar I've seen that's got that in.
No.
Or just have a pickup blend.
Yeah, you could do that. Pickup blend between the two.
That's what I have on my Strats. I have a volume, master tone, and then the what would normally be tone two or bridge tone blends in the neck or the bridge, depending on what position you're in, which is good, because
like
if you're in the bridge position, it brings in the neck and just gives a little bit more bottom end to what is usually quite a like snappy bridge pickup.
Yeah.
Really like that. It's like, I've always been it's no secret, I'm no huge fan of Strats in general, but like
I've always loved the
neck and bridge.
Oh, it's
together.
The best sound. Why is that not standard?
I know, it's
so
nuts. You can only get them on the, well, I don't even know if they're on the Elites anymore, but they were on the
they had S1 switching
on
and
the
stuff,
S1 switching,
yeah.
Deluxes. They were fantastic. That sound was amazing.
Yeah, I think they've dropped S1 for Elites. I don't know.
Sure.
good. Well, we can confirm that at a later date. Marks,
I mean, who plays active Fenders?
Well, no, you don't. They don't have to be
active.
Oh, it's just the basses.
Yeah. The S1 was on the active basses, but yeah, it was a passive circuit on everything else, even on the passive basses as well.
Oh yeah, there is an active passive on them. Yeah,
No. In the mid 2000s, American Standard Precisions and Jazzes had an S1 on the passive versions of the basses.
Oh really?
Mm.
Standards had it.
Indeed.
Oh my God.
Indeed.
Those things must be worthless now.
Nah, well, you can just take it out.
Yeah,
it's simple. Mark says, okay, tough choice here, guys. I'm buying a 2017 Explorer in 2 days if all goes well. I think this was more than 2 days ago, so this is pointless. But let's carry on. I have a PV VK100 with matching cap. I also own a Catlin Bred DSLR, I don't know what that is, and Acapulco Gold with a Wampler Plexi drive. So do I buy a Marshall DSL 100 head, the 40 watt combo, or Fender Hot Rod Deluxe and use my gains? This decision is stressing me out. So he's getting the Explorer, he's got a VK, a Valve King 100 with a matching cab, but he's also got a load of front end pedals. So I don't know which Catlin Bred he's referencing there, but
it's the Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's like a Marshall. I think it's actually, is it more like a, I think it might be more like a Vox, like a cranked Vox.
Okay.
I think it's going for the Queen style thing.
I was
going
to say, presumably it's based on someone who played a famous show at the Albert Hall.
Oh, yeah. High Watt. Sorry.
Okay.
High Watt.
Okay.
So, yeah, going for like cranked, sort of bright British tones, but not quite as sort of mid chunky as a Marshall, basically. So
I guess what he's saying is, should he stay with his Valve King 100 and matching cab, or should he look for something that's more of a kind of pedal platform? And you, because he's obviously got a range of pedal in a box pedals there, amp in a box pedals. So what do you think he should do, J Cross?
I mean, I was never a huge fan of those PVs. You know, and it's not just the heads, the cabs I always thought sounded really muddy, really just woolly, and just a bit,
they weren't very well made,
a bit cheap, really. You know, yeah. and that's part of the problem. Is I think even just buying a Marshall DSL 100 head, I don't think it's going to sound great through that cab, because those cabs aren't very good, unfortunately. Yeah. And the 40 watt DSL combos, cool, but
no,
very heavy.
Yeah, I guess
they're
so.
All right.
I don't think they were a huge thing. I don't think they were huge to write home about. I think of the DSL range, it's probably the best.
Yeah,
of the DSL range.
But the DSL range is like super average.
Mm. I mean, they're the best back in the day.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the thing is, I would say, is if he's got the Explorer and he takes it home and he plugs it into the Valve King, and he's like, I love this sound, then why would you bother changing
completely.
It?
Well, completely, yeah.
Absolutely.
But if you're finding that, the problem I find, and the reason I don't go for too many amp heads that ever have drive-in, is because I use so many drive pedals.
Yeah.
You tend to like collapse the front end because you're running so much fuzz into a distorted preamp that everything just sounds like a mush.
Yeah.
So if he's using drive pedals more and he's just using the clean channel on the Valve King, then maybe it would make sense to go for the Fender, where you've got a great clean platform that you can just run distortion pedals into.
And the Hot Rod Deluxe is such a good, like, what a great amp.
Yeah, they are very good.
Totally. I mean, my problem with the Hot Rod Deluxe is that they're not quiet at all, and you can't really use them at home. But I'm assuming if he's got a Valve King 100,
then that's
probably
not
for home anyway. So I mean, I think
again heavy as well, and only one
heavy.
Only the one, not super heavy,
but then probably
but like,
not as heavy as a Valve King 100 and 412.
Well, yeah, there is that as well. Yeah, probably not quite as heavy as that. I had a Hot Rod Deluxe for a while, and I really loved it, but I only had it at home and.
Too loud,
and I sold it to someone who, not long after they bought it off me, had a kid, and he sold it immediately.
Yeah, nice. That is the way of things. I think we're nearly up at time. We should wrap this one up. We are going to head over now and do a Patreon episode based around a question we had from the Facebook group. It was Alex's question about our own insane signature pedals. We need to devise a pedal, give it a name, say what it would do, give it a price, and then we can kind of judge each other's submissions, I think. So we're going to be thinking about that over on patreon.com/guitar nerds. Where from as little as $1 a month, you can help support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular podcast episodes without any adverts and early. The $5 tier gets you the regular podcast ad-free and early, as well as an extra half an hour every week and access to the whole back catalogue. We're up at 70 or 80 hours worth of stuff there now, plus the mini series Branton's Rant On, where Joe Branton talks about things that he hates, plus all the interviews that we talked about earlier in this episode. And our final $10 tier, you get your name read out every week on the podcast like this.
Derek Lynch, Chris Cullis, and the Justine Buchan, Blair Toms, Carlos Abacha, Andrew Mark Ross, Jenny Todd, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anderson, Moog Rabbit, Colin Anderson.
Very good.
Excellent.
Do join us, patreon.com/guitar nerds, for all that fun. You can join us.
You said final tier.
Final tier.
But
there is.
We had some interest
yep.
in the next level
this
tier.
This is, the tier where I'm going to Snapchat people a picture of myself.
You said phone call.
You said phone them.
Oh, yeah, but I also want to send them, like, a pictures of me in a dressing gown.
Okay, so we're going to set up a secret Bo club where if you want to...
I think I know who it is.
You think you know who Bo Branton is?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
The parody Joe Branton account.
Let's talk about it off air.
Okay. So possibly by next week's podcast, we'll have set up a fourth and final Patreon tier.
Never say never.
Never say never, where you get a personal monthly greeting... Plus other extra
This is never going
to
happen.
It's got the potential to get weird. I'm going to add it to the Patreon and we'll see if anyone signs up. The $20 Joe Branton VIP tier. That will be added soon. For all that news and more, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can submit questions to the podcast, learn about our new things, and also watch Matt Knight's sort of weekly-ish live streams.
Yeah. And then once I actually get like decent internet, then we can do it with two cameras and proper sound, and it'll all be wonderful.
Indeed. Looking forward to that a lot. Do follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, Instagram @GuitarNerds, and youtube.com/GuitarNerdsVideos. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Farewell. Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.